This weekend, I will be in San Francisco at my favorite comedy club in the world, The Punchline, March 4th through the 7th. That's a Wednesday through Saturday. Punchline Comedy Club, San Francisco. Recorded my album there, Read the Room, which you can go back and listen to, and then come to the show and hear a brand new hour. I can't wait. I'm bringing my boy Jeremy Shockley to play some guitar, do some improvised musical crowd work. It's going to be a lot of fun. March 4th through the 7th, Punchline, San Francisco. Get all these tickets at AdamRayComedy.com. And then I've got other shows in L.A. I'm doing the Kevin and Bean April Foolishness show on April 4th at the Microsoft Theater with Steve-O, Jeff Garland, Adam Carolla. So come to that. And I think that's it. We got a lot of great shows coming up, like today's. So let's do it. Yeah, have you, do you still do, and by the way, thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we started talking about Chappelle and you being like, I don't know how he comes up with the things, that's how I view you. So,
Thank you, man.
I think that's a common shared viewpoint on most of comedians. Like,
I appreciate it.
And in rewatching your special last night, Light Heavyweight.
Yeah, Heavy Lightweight.
Heavy Lightweight. So fucking good, dude. But
no, thank you.
Who are you again?
Thank you.
Yeah. But you've always been this way before I even got to know you through Brad. And it was like such a geek out moment because, like, you know, all you want to do is get to a point to where you feel like you have a point of view that is like fresh and where you're looking through a set of goggles that is hopefully, you know, always looking at things a little differently, and whether you're the most prolific person, your take on things is always stuff like you said with Chappelle that people go, oh, I didn't think of that, but I agree with that, or I can get on board with that. And you've always been that way. And I'm like, you strike me as someone that's just like from the get-go been like, yeah, I know who Alonzo Bowden is, so it's easy to talk about it.
I don't know that I knew who I was, but I had an opinion.
Okay.
You know, I always had an opinion. And what happened was the topical stuff and all the news stuff came mainly as a result of Last Comic, right? Because when I went in the Last Comic, I did more personal stuff. But for one thing, you had to just come up with tons of material. So I just started doing more on my topical and this and that. And then, you know, I just find the stuff outside of me funnier than my life, right? You know, so I mean, that was a time when we were dealing with Bush and the Iraq War and Paris Hilton and just all kind of that was it was just a ton.
A lot.
It was a ton of material. Schwarzenegger was governor and so you know, so it was just like, oh man, let me just start talking, you know? And you know, as far as how comics think, because this came up recently talking about parallel thought, early on when I used to talk more about like relationships and family and this and that, I bumped into Chris Rock a few times as far as parallel thought. Like I'd have a joke and then I'd hear him do something and I'd be like, gosh. But then I was like, damn, I'm thinking like I'm on the right track. Like if I had the same idea as Chris Rock, then I'm doing something right.
Right.
You know,
you wouldn't go out of your way to then like put the kibosh on the bit, because I know some people do that where they'll be
I stopped doing it.
Oh, you
will. No, if I hear, because this is why, because someone in the audience will have seen him do it. And, oh, man, you stole that shit. You know what I mean? Like, the audiences don't know anything about parallel thought. So, as a matter of fact, I had that happen. And this was a simple joke. It was back 9/11 and all that, right? So, we were talking. I said, you know, you got to take off your shoes because of the shoe bomber. I'm like, where's the bra bomber at? Right? Just, you know, a joke.
Yeah.
So, I think it was, I don't want to say Kevin Nealon, but it was somebody like that. Someone at that level, their manager contacted my manager and said that I stole the joke. And my manager was like, where would he have seen him do it? You know what I mean? Like we're in such complete different worlds. Yeah, they were like, where do you think he saw that he would steal it? It's like, no, man, that's an idea I'm sure 100 comics came up with. You know, that's like the Mexicans building the wall, right? And the first thing every comic said, well, who's going to build it? You know, of course, you know, it was just a common thought with comics. So,
Did it happen when you were you grew up where again? Queens, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Queens.
Did you was there something about the culture or the? I always feel like everyone's like a product of their environment, more or less. So it's like, were there funny people in your family?
Oh man, my mom.
Yeah,
my mom was hilarious. She passed away last year, and you know, thank you. And musicians always do a song, right? So I started thinking, like, what did my mom do? Like, what joke did my mom do that I could put in the act?
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Oh.
Like my...
Oh, to pay tribute.
My tribute to my mom's. And this is absolutely true. This happened. So she's from South Carolina, small town in South Carolina, right? And we're at a funeral. And if you've ever been to a Southern Black funeral, you know it's a production. There's a lot of drama and this and that. It's fun to watch. I mean, there's a ton to... And, well... Right before they bury him, and you always hear, oh, Lord, it's too soon. Take me, Lord, take me. And my mother just leaned over to me. She said, they yelling, take me, but they ain't jumping in that hole, are they? And man, Adam, I cracked up. And I'm literally laughing at a funeral. But, yeah, that was my mother. My mom was like just common sense, quick, funny shit. You know, like, Mom, who you voting for? She said, no matter who wins, I got to go to work tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah, little shit like that.
But great timing and delivery.
And just her take. It was her take. My mom had takes on everything. I said, women's lib. She said, women's lib. White women's lib. She said, black women fighting to not work. When you see a black woman fighting to get a job, we fighting to stay home.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah, she was hilarious, man. So
and you remember that from like an early age?
Yeah,
like,
all my life. You know, she'd just be in the kitchen and you just start talking. And the other thing is, we were news junkies. Growing up, there were two newspapers in New York. There was a morning paper and an afternoon paper, and we got both of them. And we would just read the newspaper. So there was a lot of talk about that, about what's in the news.
You were always up to date on current events and just...
Yeah, just
and having
a habit.
And then it would be an open forum to kind of discuss, and then you couldn't help because your family was just, thinking in terms of making a joke at some point after
she,
you were...
I don't know that she thought about it. It was just her
observation. Yeah.
She just... You know, my mom... In her own way, called bullshit on a lot of things. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like she's from a generation that they wouldn't say this is bullshit, but she would make her comment and you'd be like, oh, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. So I got that from her, and I got the habit of reading the news from them. And then it just kind of grew from there.
Yeah. I will say Burr, Chappelle, and rest in peace, Greg Giraldo, who was one of my favorite comics, as the four best, like, able to take what's happening now and find the true hilarity in it, despite how dark or light it may be.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. And it's no question to it. I mean, if you've been, you know, making it a part of your routine since then, it's why you have such a... I always feel like when you're talking about something, too, that's current, that you actually... A, you have all the facts, because like when I started watching Giraldo, it was one of the first ones I started like getting into that got me into comedy, and I would see him talk about certain stories like, all right, he's at least presenting enough to where if somebody were to ask him during the show like a question about it, that he could give an answer and not just have the bare minimum facts to write a joke about it, right? But I always feel like you know what's going on in it and you can speak to it from so many different layers.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta read the news.
Yeah. Can't just soak up a headline and then write
a
joke and have
it. Yeah, you gotta read
beyond. Or can you, Jay Leno? Yeah.
You could do some of that, but you gotta read beyond the headline and you think about it or whatever. And I'll tell you who I learned a lot of it from, man, watching Louis Black, you know, because Lou would pick stories that people didn't know. You know, Lou would talk about some congressman from Kansas said something. And what I learned from Lou was take the time to tell them what you're talking about. Like if they don't know, tell them what the story is.
Right.
And the hard thing about that as a comic is now you got to talk for a minute without them laughing.
Right.
You know, and you talk about Chappelle. What Chappelle did with the Emmett Till story, if you remember that one, that was in the Austin. That was amazing because he took like 5 minutes to tell the entire story of Emmett Till, which anyone listening who doesn't know, 14-year-old kid from Chicago goes to Mississippi, doesn't know the rules of Mississippi,
right?
Looks at a white woman, gets accused of whistling at the white woman. They beat him, destroyed his body, lynched him and everything. And his mother buried him with an open casket because she wanted people to see what they did to her son. It was a game changer in the civil rights movement.
You know? Chappelle's manager is going to call you and say, Alonzo, you did Chappelle's joke on Adam's podcast.
No, because I'm not doing the joke.
No, I'm sorry.
But the fact that Dave went through all of that.
Yeah, just to set it up.
And then to be able to do a joke about something so horrific. Well, again, that's why he's you know, he's operating on a different level. You know what I mean? He's George.
It's a fearlessness that I feel like is, I feel like you got that, you're cut from that same cloth. But
I just got to figure out how they're filling the forum in Madison Square Garden. See, that's the part. They let me in right up until then. Then Burr and Chappelle said, yeah, we're going to go do the forum and the garden. And I'm like, oh, because I got the Chuckle Hut. I got the Amarillo Chuckle Hut and first show Saturday sold out. So, you know.
Man, they're papering the room at the forum. They're papering.
Joe Coy didn't sell them out.
Wouldn't that be hilarious to find that out? Like that Joe Coy rented the forum and let everyone come free?
That would be fucking incredible, actually.
That would be if some comic did that, that would be a hilarious
movie. What would we do? Would we just like, because you know, there's no comedy police, there's no like, you know, nobody really holds anyone truly kind of accountable. Yeah.
Just
like,
lots of eye rolls in the green room. That's what that would be.
Yeah. People would talk about it maybe for a few weeks and then like.
This next guy sold out the forum.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah.
Well, it would just become a story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It would just become like it would grow.
Yeah.
And it would eventually it would be a football stadium.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Do you enjoy those like backstage green room like comic? Because you're such a good hang. And it's like, even when I was in Vegas and I was over there and I hit you up and I was like, can I come hang you? Let me come kick at the show and watch you. And it was like, you're a good just comic hang, you know? And it's,
yeah, man. Well, I love comics, right? See, the thing that they always try to capture us hanging out with each other.
I know, right?
They always try
every
to capture
every network's like, we want to get you the way you guys are off stage.
And it's organic. So sometimes it's funny as hell. Sometimes it's serious. Sometimes it's stupid, but it's organic. But the fun thing is we have a shorthand and we don't give a shit, right? There's nobody like if your feelings ain't getting hurt in the green room. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's an offensive thing to say, Adam.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about the person on the other side of that?
Well, I never.
You know, you try that shit one time and it'd be like, all right, well, yeah, you door's right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a
learned thing though, right? Because I've definitely like, as I've gotten like more into stand up and just been, you know, once I became a regular at clubs and I'm in these green rooms more often, you see that like, you know, there is kind of just it's an open forum for you for people just to kind of like talk about the things that may become bits or may just be like a safe space
hierarchy to talking too, because we were actually talking about this week
about this the other day. Yeah,
you get to talk as you get more credits, and if there's a little opening and you have one Comedy Central appearance, you can kind of come in with a quick jab. But if you're surrounded by a bunch of famous comics, you can't just like hold court.
Yeah, like how would you view this? We had some friends come through and hang at the show at the store a few weeks ago in the main room, and they were kind of chiming in. You looking for your water? There you go. And they were kind of chiming in a little bit too much to like people that were on the show and like yourself, like, you know, famous comic. And you're like, all right, like there is definitely like there's a dance to just sitting down and being like, like if I'd never met you and be like, dude, Alonzo, man. So like, you know, I'm doing my first college, man. Like, man. First of all, Alonzo, colleges are crazy, man. Cause these kids, they don't know what's
right,
up.
Right.
Like, and you've never met me, don't even have my name. It's like, there's a balance between jumping right in and maybe like listening and reading the room. Right.
Yeah. When you're a rookie, you shut up, you know, just shut up and listen and try to learn and jump in. The worst thing is somebody testing jokes. Like, you know, that some or they want to be funny all the time.
Yeah.
Right there. And that's when you know it's a new comic, when they're trying to be funny all the time. And I remember and Godfrey will kill me for this, but me and Godfrey fuck with each other. And I love Godfrey. But we were on the bus. We were doing a Just for Laughs tour. And, you know, Godfrey was just going and going. Yeah. And finally, I just said, Godfrey, shut up. And the whole bus was like, thank you, because they were all scared to say it.
Of course.
You
know? Yeah,
but we could say it because we're cool with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
We're at that point, right?
And, gotta have that understood rapport, right?
Yeah. And then there was another time. This was my absolute favorite of a new comic, and I mess with him about it to this day. There's a comic named Mal Hall.
Yeah.
You know Mal.
Love Mal. He was there in Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah. Mal.
Forever.
Yeah. Mal's great.
Mark started with Mal in San Diego.
Okay.
Right?
So, yeah. So we're in Vegas, and Mal, I'm gonna do this story as quick as I can. We're working Brad's room in MGM, and Mal's friend was there, and he had like a Cinnabon or some joint like that, right? Mm. So Mal's like, hey, man, he's going to take us to lunch, right? So we go to lunch, and Mal's going to hate me for telling this story, so get it out as much as you can.
As long as you do Mal's voice, that's all I ask for. He's got one of the best voices in comedy.
So we go to Caesar's, we go to some restaurant, we're having lunch, and the manager comes over, right? And the manager says, how you doing? Welcome. You having a good time, right? Now, you know, in Vegas, that means lunch is free.
Right.
Right? That's how Vegas works. Yeah. Man, he gave us 20% off.
What?
I was like, what kind of bullshit is this, right? So I said, Mal, let me show you how Vegas works.
Yeah.
So I called George Wallace. And this is when George was still doing his show, when George owned Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, George, you know, we're going to have lunch. And George's like, yeah, okay, so meet at this steakhouse or something to Paris, right? So we get to the Paris, we walk up, they're like, Mr. Wallace isn't here, but the table is ready, right this way. You know, we go in, we sit down, George shows up, right? So George says, yeah, Alonzo, how you doing? Blah, 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 this and that. And then Mal, I'm like, this is Mal. He looks at Mal, he said, do I know you? Mal's like, no. He said, good, because I don't like you, right? and then George just turns his head and goes back to talking to me, right? Like Mal's not even there. So we're talking, George said, what are you working on? And I was like, man, I got this bit, this Obama thing I'm working, blah, blah, blah. And Mal's like, I'm working on, George said, you need to work on shutting the fuck up. And just
oh, my God.
And then at the end of lunch, we left, right? And I said to Mal, oh, and George was calling him a punk ass. That was his name as far as George. I know knew your punk ass, right? So I said to Mal, I said, Mal, did you notice something? He said, what? I said, did you see a check? Did you even see? I said, that's Vegas. I said, when you somebody in Vegas, you don't pay for shit. Now shut your punk ass up.
That's fucking amazing. Yeah, dude, there's so, I mean, you have to be in enough situations to even get comfy, to even like know how to navigate through. And unfortunately, like there is no, that's why comedy is so great. There's no like rule book or like when you start out, like, and no one wants to go out of their way to tell somebody, you just got to go through something like that.
Yeah,
right?
you got to be told. You got to be put in your place. Now, I'll tell you the first time, and I remember this, where I was like, oh shit, what am I doing here? Like, I don't know if you ever had one of those moments, you know? I was in front of the Improv, and we were talking about The Road, and I was talking about The Road with Damon Wayans and Dave Chappelle.
Wow.
And I've been doing it, you know, I've been on The Road for 2 years, you know what I mean? But yeah. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing talking to Dave Chappelle and Damon Wayans? But it was cool as hell, you know what I mean?
Were they including you? Like,
yeah, yeah, we were talking, and that's when you know you're a comic, right? When you do that, when you talk to other comics and you have the respect of them, you know.
Yeah.
And I ain't gonna try to tell them road stories, you know. I'm gonna try to tell Damon Wayans my road story about getting laid in Boise. You know, I don't think he's gonna be that impressed. I'll just keep that one. I'll keep that one till I get to the Chuckle Hut in Amarillo. Yeah. Man.
Yeah, he's got Halle Berry stories.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's like, really? Yeah. Who'd you hook up with? Well, never mind.
Yeah. You're like, Howie Berry.
Yeah. Howie Berry. Yeah. Yeah, there's something too about being in those situations. And even you talking about people like who test bits. It's I don't know if you remember this, but the first time I even met you was when I auditioned for Last Comic Standing. I don't know if you remember this, because
I don't remember specifically, but I remember that
course.
Era.
Well, yeah, that it was you, Kathleen Madigan, and Ant were the judges. That was season what?
5.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And this was like the very end of the day. It was at the Improv, and they do the auditions, and you know, it was like a long, treacherous, like, I mean, you guys, I don't know how long you were sitting there.
Yeah, it was all day. All day, yeah.
Like,
comics coming in doing 2 minutes at a time for 8 hours. Oh, yeah, God. That was the gig.
I mean, that sounds awful. So it makes complete sense that I got the shit that I got. So this is, by the way, like, my manager's like, I got you on audition for Last Comic. It's like, you're on at the very end. They were able to slip you in. It's like, it's kind of crazy. Like, and I had to rush over there. And even at, I think I was maybe 2-3 years in. And so, like, you're doing, like, 2 minutes. So I'm quick going through. I was like, I got 2 minutes, right? Even 3 years. And I got 2 minutes. Now I'm just saying, like, what 2 minutes? And then once the pressure really – sunk in. I was like, fuck, do I have 2 minutes? Because then I started going over all my jokes, and I all of a sudden was like, I hate everything that I have that I want to do. And I don't know if you remember this, but so I go in at the very end, and it's like, it's, I mean, you never see the improv set up with more cameras and lights, right. And there were big jibs and swinging dollies, and you guys are sitting there with fucking like spotlights, and it's very, it's like Shark Tank for comics, you know? And you walk in, and they put, and there's a producer backstage. It was also a little too dramatized. Like, I was like, I think this guy can just open the door. Maybe Antonio's there and be like, hello, yeah. Hello. And like, you know, greet you and you know, grab a chicken finger and go in. But they open the door and this guy shoves me in and he just goes run to the stage and just get up there and grab the mic and say your name. And I get up there and I go, what's up, guys? My name's Adam Ray. And I just remember seeing you and you had this, and again, I was such a fan. You had this big smile on your face and you were like, what's up, man? Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, do your shit, you know? And then Kathy and Ant were you know, somewhat warm. And then I launched into my jokes, which at the time, what I thought were killers was a joke about Folgers coffee, NyQuil, and being, and my opening thing was, this feels a lot like my Little League games because my dad's not here. And that got that laugh, and that's it. So that was, would have loved that.
Was it just them three and the crew?
Just them three and the crew.
Yeah.
You had, so, I mean, what laughs are you, I mean, that's tough because you know comics don't laugh.
Totally. But also, I'm like, I know in my head, I'm like, all right, I'm at the very end. In my head, I'm like, all right, they've done their true responses to people. And then they've done the, we need to get you guys not liking a few people, right? Like the produced, like someone walks in right away.
Just so you know, they never had to do that.
Yeah, it's good.
That was easy.
Oh. Oh, so it was all genuine. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Man, it's good to be back. And you know what? The best part about being back is sharing the goodies with you, the fans. I love candles, okay? You know from listening to this podcast, we've always had candles living around the apartment and now my new place. And I'm tired of buying the bullshit candles from the store. I want some personal touch. I want something handmade. So that's why I found Hangover Candle Company. That's right. Homemade by a bartender in Fort Collins, Colorado. He's a big comedy fan, podcast fan, reached out, said, I love the pod, would love to send you some candles. I'm like, I'm not comfy giving you my address. He's like, come on, trust me. I was like, all right, let's roll the dice. Boom. Now I've got fucking 40 different flavors of Hangover Candle Company candles in my place. They're cut, sanded, poured, packed, and shipped all by him. And you can choose from over 200 different containers, okay, to build your candle in, and over 40 different scents to create your own smell. You can customize your own scent. Shit, man, they've got flavors like fucking root beer, apple pie, cinnamon stick, coffee, fresh cut grass, hazelnut, lavender, leather, maple syrup, peach, pine, sandalwood, spearmint, sea breeze, vanilla bean, watermelon. Go to Hangover Candle Co. On Etsy, okay? Go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co. It'll pop up the shop. And then pick your candles and then use the promo code ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. 25%. Hangover Candle Co. is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But again, go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co., find the candles and the smells you want, create your own, and then use ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. I love candles. They're great for any occasions, bar mitzvahs, circumcisions, fucking weddings, funerals, gender reveal parties, divorce parties, coming out parties, coming in parties, coming parties. These candles are the shit, and they're my fave, and I want you guys to have them. So type in Etsy.com and then type in Hangover Candle Co. and pick your candles and use ALN25 at checkout for 25% off. All right, start smelling better, start looking better, start feeling better, okay? Because everybody farts and candles are a great way to get rid of that. And now back to the episode.
A lot of people talk about when they audition for the show, and there's a lot of auditions I don't remember, a few I do. But if you're doing it 2 or 3 years, this is what I learned judging. You're doing the same thing as other comic. You know what I mean? Like at that point in your career, you're doing the same stuff. You know, like, you know where a comic is in their career, right? Like when they start traveling, you're going to hear jokes about airplanes and hotels because this is new to them,
yeah,
right? Because
yeah,
they just started traveling. Yeah. And
as well, they should be doing that, right?
I mean, right. And you know, this, the we each had a joke that we hated, right? Me, Kathleen, and, well, Ant was trying to be Simon Cowell, so he was going to play the hater on everything.
He did make a comment about my shirt, which I thought was real quick.
But Kathleen hated half her jokes, when it's like, you know, my dad's Iranian and my mother's German, so I'm blank, right? She hated those because so many people do those jokes, right? Mine was if a woman comic came in and said anything about going out with a homeless guy.
What if you just said anything?
I was just,
I was furious, yeah.
No, that was the thing.
What about a homeless?
Yeah, anything. I've dated a homeless. And I'm like, just shut up. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
You did not date a homeless guy. Would you stop bullshit? Like, because so many women were doing, I don't know what it was. And it was like the first one that comes in and says, a homeless guy hit on me. And I said, go home, you fucking bum. She's getting on the show. She's going to be the one who's different, you know, because you hear so many people doing the same things. But, you know, at 2 or 3 years, you know it now.
Yeah.
You weren't ready for that show.
1,000%. But again, it's 3 years is also such a great time where you're like, you know, I had gotten on a few, like, you know, I was doing a lot of bringer shows at the store, a lot of open mics, the Haha and improv, wherever else, driving with Brian Scalaro to Santa Barbara to do 8 minutes, you know, and then walking back. And then I got to a point to where I was like, I think like I'm ready to maybe do a special, like a half hour. Just thinking that you're like enough shows of like laughs with friends and not friends. But that was, yeah, I was so not ready. But I walked up and my opening joke after the dad one was, so I saw this Folgers coffee commercial the other day. You know, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. And I go, is it? And I'm about to do the, you know, punchline to the joke. And Kathleen just goes, whoa, 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 whoa. A Folgers joke? She goes, what is it, 1986? And I just kind of paused and I froze. I didn't know there was going to be like talk back.
Yeah, we had comments.
I'm in my head, I'm like, I'm the last fucking comic. Can you let me get out 120 seconds of dog shit material so I can walk out of here with a little dignity? And I just was like, and then she's like, come on, like what? And then you, and this is, dude, why I love you and why you're such a great dude. Like, you literally go, now hold on a second, Kathleen. You go, now let him like finish a joke. And then you go, and then I did it. And I go, thanks, man. I go, it, you know, to me, that slogan should be, the best part of waking up is not dying in your sleep. And then it's silence like this. And then you go, all right, we let you do that. Do you got anything else, man? But again, you were like nice about it and you gave me an opportunity and you said, do one more thing. Like, you were like, can you do one more bit?
That was his nice way of calling you a punk ass.
No, you know.
And I did a NyQuil bit and it like no laughs. And then, but dude, I walked out with, I mean, look, I called my mom and told her I'm done with comedy. I swear to God. It was so, dude, it was gut wrenching because I was like, I didn't know that you could. Because look, man, you got friends from back home that might be like, dude, you ain't shit yet, man. I haven't seen you on TV. But you're just like, well, you don't know shit because I get on stage and you don't. So like you're not really shaking me up yet. But having pros and people you look up to just throw you shade, it was devastating.
Yeah, well, sorry. That was the job. You know, that was the gig. I mean, it was.
But you were so kind, man.
I'll tell you, the hardest part of doing that was turning down, like I had to turn down Bob Zaney.
No, you know, way.
Like in the beginning of my career, I opened for Bob Zaney and we had to say like, you're not making the cut. And other pros, you know, and a lot of times it was, they picked the wrong material for the audition.
Right.
So it's like, we know you're funny, but we can't pass you based on the fact we know you're funny. You have to be funny right now, you know? And
so if I didn't do a Folgers coffee joke, maybe a Maxwell coffee joke.
See, you're going the wrong way. Everybody's at Starbucks and you're doing Maxwell House. Then the folks at home, and this was before Google, so they literally would have had to get an encyclopedia and look up Maxwell House. They
couldn't. Yeah.
How about Tang, huh? Yeah.
If you gave me one more minute, I was...
Tang is tangy. You see, it's tangy when you mix it.
I was 90 seconds away from like, hey, the Slinkies are crazy, aren't they? Yeah.
Tang, what are you, Neil Armstrong? So many,
I will break down being a judge on Last Comic Standing almost to the point percentage, right? 10% train wrecks. Absolutely horrible, but that's why it was fun to watch them. People you know. That. Ex-porn stars. We had some guy in Minnesota who literally came in dressed as a Viking, you know, and did this whole thing, like all
or
of that.
Just the show, or was he a comic doing that?
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. Because he walked in and he wouldn't break character. Like he was, you know, when we were in England, we had a Scottish guy whose accent was so thick, we literally couldn't understand him. We were like, we're sure you're very funny. We don't understand a word you're saying, you know. So you had 10% of that, right? Then you had like 50%, at least 50% where you were, where just not ready yet. Just, you're probably funny. You're probably going to be funny. Just haven't been doing it yet, you know, blah, 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 right? Then you had about another 30% that were good. They were in the 5-6 year range, you know, just one of them might rise to the surface, doing a lot of the same topics, right, this and that. Then it started getting tough, right? So you had 5%, you're on the show, just came in, killed it, like Matt Kirshen or Gina Yashere, where it was like, thanks for making it easy, just move on, right? The hardest ones were the ones who were good enough, but why would we pick you instead of you? See, that was the hardest one, where like if you and Mark came in and you're both funny and you're both good enough to be on the show, but we can only pick one of you. So how do we know whether we pick Mark or Adam? You know, those were the toughest ones. And the biggest mistake, and I apologize to him when I saw him, the one where we kind of missed, Lil Rel.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we shot down Lil Rel. He auditioned in Minnesota, and it was like, nah. You know, and then I saw him about 2 years ago. You know, it was It was after Montreal. I think it was around Get Out. It was around Get, and I said, "Yeah, man, we were wrong." You know, and he just laughed. He was cool as hell. But he's like, "I remember that shit, man. I wasn't ready for that." You know, but we missed on that one. Who knows? But when we did it, Minnesota was the reason I remember Minnesota, because the assumption is that LA and New York are going to have the best comic.
Right.
Without a doubt, Minnesota had the best comics, and they didn't have enough spots. They had like six, like New York had 10 comics, LA had 10, Minnesota had 6, but we got the entire Midwest, like everybody from, you know, Chicago and Minneapolis and Nashville, like that whole area, they all came up to audition, and we ended up with so many great comics. They were telling comics like, "Hey, go to Austin, go to Tech, go to Phoenix.
Yeah.
You know, we'll let you try out there because we just don't have room here."
Do you get inspired when you see like young comics from that, or I guess I'm just curious, like where, because you've been doing stand-up how long now?
27 years,
and still be crushing them in. And how four specials? How many?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, it's to continue to kind of be prolific with your material and to keep kind of pushing boundaries and yourself creatively. I'm like, where do you get that? You know, because I'm, you know, almost 14 years in, and it's like just always trying to find something to get excited about. Mark and I were even just talking about Chappelle. He rewatched all four specials. Was it yesterday, Mark?
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't have a lot to do right now, but he watched.
He's watching one right now.
I watched all four.
Yeah, but we were talking about finding the inspiration where, like, and you forget when you see certain specials like that, but I don't know how much you're watching comedy when you're not doing it. Some people say they don't want to do it.
I don't watch, once in a while I watch specials. I don't want to watch specials because I don't want to get your ideas in my head.
Right.
Because you're...
There can only be one Folgers joke.
Yeah.
And there's... Yeah.
But no, I mean, that's what happens. So some specials I'll watch, like if I hear someone's special's really good or if I know the person, I'll check it out. The new comics, what I love about the new comics is they're doing it in a different way. Even you're generationally a generation behind me, you know.
Yeah.
And watching... Like I came up more setup, punch, writing, stuff like that. Now I see more stream of consciousness stuff. I see attitude. Attitude works for some, you know, but I love the art, man. That's what inspires me. I just fucking love comedy. I mean, I love everything about it. So whenever I come up with a new idea or create something new, I'm anxious to try it and see what's there.
Yeah.
So that's what keeps me inspired. But yeah, new comics, you know, the social media thing, right? I'm not anti-social media, but it has definitely created what in music would have been called the one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
And that's annoying. It's not bad. It's just annoying. It's like okay.
The one-bit wonder.
Go over there. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you got 20 million YouTube followers.
Yeah.
Go over there and do that. But this is for the art.
You're saying like when they try to jump over to the stage.
Yeah. This is for the art.
Like so when you go to the improv and you're like, whoa, who's here tonight? It's sold out. And it's like,
some YouTube kid.
Yeah, yeah. You know, clubs are going to be about making money, about putting asses in seats, you know. And then you go to a club like Comedy Magic, like, oh, no, you got to be funny. Like, that's what Richard looks at, yeah. You know. You got to be funny. Yeah. So
in long term, that's what works.
There's still it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Just put up YouTube guy people, and then you check 2 months later, they're slow.
Yeah. Also, there's not a lot of those people, I think, are going for the picture and to see them live.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Sucks too. And then hopefully not a return thing, so that it's like taking dates away from people that are trying to make it an actual you know, job. But there's also something about, like, I don't know, like, well, when you write, do you write, because you still ride your motorcycle a lot? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you write when you're riding? Is that why you
yeah,
do it?
Yeah, man. Sometimes that clears my head. It's like the most meditative place for me.
Gerard Carmichael used to tell me when he was didn't have a car and he was walking everywhere, he was like, that's why I write. And then when I saw you and I think Dean used to ride a motorcycle, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think maybe the only comics I know of that
yeah.
do. And I was like, so, you know, fascinated by it, because I'm like, you know, such a pussy, I would never get on one. But if you got a Vespa, I'll fucking, I'll race you. But but like, so I was like, oh, that's got to be a time for you to zone out and probably get a lot of clear head.
Yeah, definitely. On. Definitely. And, you know, it comes up and then like, oh, shit, I got to write that down, you know, and I get it. But when you what you were talking about, Mark, about it coming back to being funny, and this is you remember people you learn from, right? So in the era of the alternative comic, right? And we were at some show and every comic came up and they put their notes on the music stand, right? Because Janine Garofalo did that. And it was the alt thing to do to not memorize your material.
Yeah.
To just read it. And I leaned over to Rick Overton and I said, you know, if they're all doing it, by definition, it is not alternative.
Oh, man.
And Rick just looked at me and said, it always comes back to funny. And Rick is a guy who's been doing it for 40 years. Yep. You know, Rick's been around forever.
Robin and everybody.
And he was like, yeah, man, it's always these fads. He said, they come and go, but then it always comes back to being funny. At some point, you got to be funny. You can fool them. Sometimes they fool them all the way to TV. And then that moment comes and you're like, eh, you ain't got it, you know? And I've been, you know, relatively successful. I've had a pretty good career. But the thing I love and the thing I'm proud of is the respect of other comics.
Yeah, man.
Right? Because, you know, we all know that the richest comic on stage ain't necessarily the funniest comic in a room. Might not even be in the top 10.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But they got millions of dollars, which I ain't knocking. But
yeah, it seems like a great life. What is it about that makes us want the, like, because I mean, I know, you know, I think everyone deals with that in different ways, but like wanting the, you know, I remember when I had a lot of really, you know, sweet conversations with Rogan off stage. And then one night I remember I saw him in the back after I got off stage opening the OR, and I had done kind of some musical improv riffing with Jeff Scott, the piano guy, which I'll do from time to time. And I got off and he just kind of walked right by me, said some things to Eric Griffin and then whatever. And then I was like, oh, Eric, was he like making fun of me? He's like, I mean, what do you want me to say? You know? And then yeah. I was like, God damn it. And I like was so butthurt about it. And then like since then we've actually even joked about it and like it's all good. And I was obviously making it more of a deal in my head than it was. But to like have him look at me and think a certain way shot me down for a couple of days.
I love Joe because Joe is such a purist.
Yeah.
Joe is a purist, and I've seen Joe take people apart to where I felt sorry for him.
Yeah.
Where it's like, Joe, they just wanted to do this.
Yeah. Fucking around, you know? It's just, yeah.
But no, he's a purist. And again, you know what it is? It's the love of the art, and it's defending what we do.
Yeah.
Right? Comedy is the most disrespected creative platform. And I've always said it's because... In this is my opinion, because everyone's made someone laugh, you know, in their life. At some point, they've made someone laugh, right? They haven't always sung a song. They didn't do an acting scene, but they've made someone laugh. So they think they can do what we do, or they think what we do is
easy. Even off of one, like, throwaway joke on the bus or saying something to the or to a teacher on your way out of the classroom that makes them. And you don't even think about, like, if it was a small laugh or a big laugh. They register as it, like... I'm a comedian.
Yeah, exactly. So they think they can disrespect what we do. You know, it's like heckling. Like I don't know, a couple of months ago or whatever, I was at the Ice House, right? And I'm doing this joke about I had this joke about Cory Booker is dating Rosario Dawson, right? And I'm like, man, he pulled that fine Puerto Rican and somebody else, Dominican. I'm like, what? She's not Puerto Rican. She's Dominican. I'm like, okay, first of all, she is Puerto Rican. And second of all, like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, who yells out a correction? I said, you know, nobody went to Hamilton and said, excuse me. They did not rap in 17.
Yeah.
In 1706, yeah. They did not rap. This is, no, you're going to have to stop this show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, yeah, only in right. comedy does someone feel like, oh, yeah, I can yell out and correct the stage.
Yeah. It's also completely appreciated it when they give out the awards. Like the Academy Awards, there's no best comedic actor or actress, but you can host the show. And if you said something wrong 10 years ago, you can be fired from the show. It's like, yeah. dance like this if you want to, but they completely just disrespect it as an art, like that it's just easy to do.
Yeah, and but actors don't.
Right.
You know what I mean? Actors love comics.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
of course.
Yeah. They always say, man, I couldn't do that. Just stand up there by myself and no.
Have you had people reach out to you or come up to you that are fans that you didn't know? That are
absolutely.
Actors,
absolutely. What people, where I was shocked they knew who I was.
Crazy.
And they, you know, and they talked to you about it. I was talking with Don Cheadle and saying to myself, what the fuck am I doing talking to Don Cheadle? There is no reason for me to be talking to Don Cheadle. I lost respect for him for talking to me. I was like, you're better than this.
You're better than this.
You have no business. No, that was cool. You know, comic-wise, Robert Townsend.
Wow, dude. Meteor
Robert
Man.
Townsend, yeah. He came up and he didn't just say I'm a fan. Like, he was telling me jokes that he had seen me do and stuff. And that was like, yeah, that's that. You're just like, wow, you know?
Does it like...
Very cool.
Does that stuff kind of, I mean... Have you gotten to a point to where you've like done enough cool shit to where you kind of just like it, you know, brushes off the shoulder and you soak it up for a moment and appreciate it? Or do you go home? Do you call somebody? Or do you like, you know, write your diary about it?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I'll tell people about it, but it's more like I appreciate it, but I'm not going to ego trip over it. You know what I mean? But yeah, I definitely appreciate it. I don't think you ever get used to that. You know, I don't think you ever get used to somebody who is great in their genre respecting you and your genre.
Right.
That's like one of the coolest things.
What about athlete-wise?
That can
I think
happen.
That's like, if you're a sports fan, I think that's,
man,
can be almost cooler than the actor thing, right? Like who's your favorite athlete?
Less.
Or baller?
LeBron, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Even though I'm a Clipper fan, I still respect LeBron.
Yeah.
Me and Mark were talking about this yesterday. If you saw this game, the Lakers versus Boston, at the end of the game, LeBron won the game. And I was like, see, that's what, you still need someone who could do that. Someone who at the end of the game is like, give me the ball, I'll handle this shit.
Yeah.
You know, and he's that guy. But last summer I did a benefit for Ray Allen and Chris Spencer put it together.
Nice.
So Chris tells me, yeah, man, Ray's a big fan of yours. I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, man, Ray.
The all-time 3-point leader.
Right. And I meet him and he's like, oh, man, I remember when you did. And he's telling me about this Obama joke I did in 08, right? So I go on stage. I'm like, big fan. Yeah. I ain't seen no All-Star tickets. I ain't seen tickets to the final. Like, what the hell kind of fan, Ray?
Yeah.
I ain't never heard from you.
Got game deleted scenes?
Yeah. I said, well, you know, you're a big fan. Step up. Yeah.
I didn't realize that Ray Allen was going through hard times. What's wrong with him?
Yeah. Dude, that's amazing, dude. Yeah, I think nobody gets immune to getting to a point to where you don't want some sort of validation, right? Like whether it is respect from comics or shout outs like that that you weren't expecting, or I mean, I don't know. Is it, or do you just get it enough from getting off stage and being like, oh, cool, that new shit I worked on is working?
Well, on a personal level, yeah. On a personal level, it's that. But the hearing from other people and stuff like that, yeah, it's really cool. And it's like when I became an old guy. Right. Like about now, it's been a while. Now it's been about 8-9 years. But when I realized.
Yeah, your bits about that are phenomenal. But
no, I'm talking about being an old pro comic. I'm talking about being a comic.
Yeah.
Like the old vet, you know, like,
okay,
you were
yeah.
talking about
yeah, yeah.
like meeting me and stuff. Yeah. When I started hearing comics asking me questions that I remembered asking George Wallace and Dom Herrera. Right. And I was like, oh, shit, and I knew the answer. I was like, oh, shit, now I'm the old guy. Like, now I'm the old guy that they're coming to. So I'm, have a seat, youngster. Let me tell you how this works, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But even that's kind of cool, you know? Like Louis Anderson told me a story that I never thought of, but it was funny. When he had his live show in Vegas, he said he had a bunch of young people come into the show, like in their 20s. And he's like, and then he realized they had grown up with Life with Louie. That was their cartoon when they were a kid.
Oh, man.
And now they were old enough to come see him. And I was like, how cool would that shit be? That, I mean, it reminds you that you're old when they're like, I was watching you when I was four.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But still, just the idea that they're coming to see you as adults from a cartoon, they, you know, that, yeah, that's got to be a cool feeling.
That's true.
You know what we've been talking about lately, too?
Family Feud, yeah.
Yeah.
What we've been asking each other a lot lately, like, who do you think is, like, the best comic besides all the best of all time? Like, you can't name Richard Pryor, Dave Chappelle, Jerry Seinfeld, Eddie Murphy, or George Carlin. Like, kind of like the Mount Rushmore. Who's, like, your secret, hidden, most favorite comic?
Robin Harris.
Okay. This is a great answer. Why?
Robin was the quickest I'd ever seen. Robin was like, there was no, he had a joke for anything. He was so quick and so funny. And yeah, so that's what I loved about Robin. Robin could crack on anybody, and he was so quick to do it. So I would put him in that category. Richard Jenny.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Man,
yeah.
Richard Jenny. Platypus Man is one of the greatest, like you talk about specials, that is a 1 hour that is seamless. Like when you don't even notice he switched topics because his segue, like everything he did was so funny. Yeah, Richard Jenny was a beast.
I got a Richard Jenny story. So I used to bartend the Comedy Store La Jolla, and he Don Marrero's the first famous person I met. Richard Jenny was the second. Everyone's like, don't talk to him. He's a hard ass, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, he was, until he knew you, yes.
Yes, and then then I was bartending, and he goes, hey, man, what are you doing right now? He goes, he asked me where I was from. I said, upstate New York. He goes, he was from somewhere, I think. Was he Brooklyn guy?
I don't know.
Right. And so he goes, you mind coming outside and talking to me? So he'd go outside, smoke cigarettes, talk at me for like 3 minutes. He goes, all right, we're done. Then he let me go back inside. People are like, wow, he likes you. I go, I didn't say a single word. He just wanted someone to talk to. But then I thought I was special. Like, he's always been nice to me.
Yeah.
You know, you got that thing where people are like, yeah, he's difficult. He goes, he's always been great with me.
Yeah. I didn't say anything to him, but yeah, I think.
Blue smoke in my face. Let me go back inside.
That's a sign of respect.
First time I met Rich Jenny, this is when I was in my comedy writing class, right? Just hadn't done a show yet. It was at some theater. It's not there anymore, but it used to be in Santa Monica. Oh, yeah. Wow. And Comedy Central, I'm trying to remember what they used to have a half hour show that they used to record there. That was when I met Chappelle too, for the first time. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, Rich Jenny pulls up. It's during the day, and I'm just hanging out. And he tosses me his car keys like he thought I was the valet, you know? And everyone said, you should have just took the fucking car. You know? Of course, I wouldn't have done
what
it
did
then.
You do?
That, I said, man, I don't work here.
Yeah,
you know. And
also, why would they hire a 6'5" valet driver? That's when you know you're crazy. You go, pick the tallest guy. He's definitely the valet.
But the comic moment I had like that – and. I mean, I was laughing so hard, I could not breathe. We were doing this benefit, and Robin Williams, I think, was presenting an award to Buddy Hackett.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I'm outside, smoking a cigarette, and this is when Don Imus did the thing about the black girls basketball team.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The nappy-headed hoes. So Buddy Hackett walks up. Now, I've never met him. I don't know who he is. And he's like, I know you're going to let Imus have it. I know you, because he said, you black comics, man, you get it. You know, you colored guys, when something, oh, man, when you get a hold of something, you Negroes can make it. So, and he keeps going. And
doubling down.
He keeps going. And I am crying. It was so funny, because it's like, this is surreal. Like, this is Buddy Hackett. And he's doing black material on me. Oh, man.
Trying to pump me up.
But it was so funny because he kept saying the same thing. But every time it would be something, it went from like black.
Wait, but he was doing a bit.
Yeah, he was joking. No, he was joking. No, he was joking.
Wait a second. Yeah.
He was joking.
Okay.
But
times
it was so funny because of the way he kept doing, like, you black
straight
guys
face,
are really
like,
great. You're really fun, man. When you African Americans get a hold of something, you know, when you colored guys get, and he keeps, and I'm just dying. And it was like, what a moment. You know, I've had a couple of those moments. I had, it's on my Facebook and Instagram, everything, backstage and Just for Laughs, when Don Rickles starts cracking on me.
No way.
Like, there's no, like, as a comic, like, what greater moment do you have than sitting next to Rickles while he's insulting you?
And no,
he's
that's
like, hey, this guy's very funny. You, first thing was, what's your name? Alonzo. Alonzo, that's good, he took a white man's name so the police won't think he did it. Anyway, and just that was the first line and just went from there. And I couldn't breathe. I'm just laughing. And you're like, what a moment. You know what I mean? Like that's. And the sad thing is now people would be like, well, that's rather offensive or something. You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, you completely missed it.
How do you navigate? And I've seen you talk about this, like where people, and they probably ask, you know, someone like you who is so topical and current with material. It's like, do you think there's like a, you know, an off limits piece of material? Or like, I hear this question all the time if I see a comedian on a morning show where they're like, how do you even be funny in a culture like this? I mean, can you even say the word joke? And you're like, what?
You know this. Every comic knows this. If it's funny, you can say it.
Yes.
That's all. If it's funny, you can say it. If you intentionally go for to offend, like you know, like Ari did that joke about Kobe, right? After Kobe died and people got mad.
Well, but, joke even, like, you know.
But that's also Ari being Ari.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Ari's going for, he wants to offend you, yes, and piss you off.
Yes.
If he pisses you off, then he did his job. And that's how he worked. That's his brand, as the kids say. But no, man, if it's funny, then it's...
Funny always wins, huh?
Funny always wins. You've heard me. Dude, I can't even, I don't even know if I'm allowed to describe the bit, but I love it. My nigga midget joke. I love the nigga midget joke. And when you just heard that, you're like, oh my God, but you've heard the bit.
Oh yeah, it's
and
amazing.
In the context of it, it works.
It's unreal.
Because the joke is about the words, yes, and people's response to words. And if you're going to respond to words without knowing the context of the word, then you're an idiot.
Yep.
Because any word can be funny but you got to put in the work to write the joke, right? Like the guy, the director who did Joker, I can't remember his name.
Todd Phillips.
Yeah, when he said, I'm not doing comedy anymore because you can't be funny, you know, my response was, write harder. You could still be funny. You could be funny about damn near anything.
Yeah.
There's very few things that would be off limit. And it's fun. And this is something Chappelle does. And it's something I try to do. When you can find something funny about a topic that you're not supposed to talk about, that's the best joke in the world.
Yeah.
That, you know, Brian Holtzman.
Yeah.
Now you were talking about great comics people don't know. Man, Holtzman kills. And it's horrible, the shit he says. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. When we were on Last Comic, man, Corey Holcomb, you know, like if you're,
yeah, that guy's brilliant.
If you're a woman looking for misogyny, you know, your head will explode listening to Corey Holcomb, right? But Corey's a good guy, yeah. You know what I mean? This is his act.
Yeah, he's that's a great guy.
It's the act.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
It was like back in the day, there were people who were upset with Dice. You know, like as if it were real. You know what I mean? As if Dice was walking into grocery stores. Hickory dickory dock, suck my dick. It's like, no, I don't think he does.
And where's
that.
The peanut butter?
Yeah. I think he can behave in polite society.
Yeah.
So. Back then when people were offended, they couldn't like find each other. Now people can find each other. So it feels like a little like army is almost raised. Like, oh my God, I got 2,000 people disagreeing with me at once. Because back in the day, it was just like probably one or two people. And now it feels overwhelming.
Oh, we had a great moment. You know, back when we did Last Comic Standing, you know, me and Hef talk about it all the time. We left with well over 50,000 MySpace friends because we know how to time our careers. So that's what you had. You had MySpace and you had forums.
Yeah.
And Hef was like, you know how much someone has to hate you to look up a forum, create a username, come up with a password, log in, and then tell you they hate you. Like you had to
it'll
put some effort
hate.
Into
yeah.
it. Yeah. You couldn't just throw out a tweet. No, you had to remember your password when they hated you again the following week.
Yeah. It means you're doing something right though.
Yeah, I know, right? I just was saw Hef in Arizona and the place he got in
Detroit.
Dude, I mean, look, I had a handful of tequilas, but we got real fired up about the idea about getting a bunch of comics out there for, I don't know if it was either a show or a hang, but man, didn't that look...
What is it?
Oh, like he bought a ranch.
Bought a ranch in Detroit.
John Heffron?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can get a house there for $2,000.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Oh, so he bought a ranch?
It's gorgeous. It looks like the set of Little House on the Prairie, and it's just like, I mean... It looked like the
is that where he lived now?
Well, yeah, he lived. This is the thing, and I talked to him about it. So he went through a just hell divorce,
yeah.
right? He just went through a shit divorce. And we used to live near each other up in Woodland Hills, right?
Oh, so you were right along there for the ride.
Not for most of it, but yeah, for a lot of it, I hit, you know. But anyway, so he sells his house there, and he goes to Detroit, and he buys, and I said, you bought a house that a woman's going to look at and want to marry you. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, you don't want to be married. Don't buy a farmhouse with a ranch. And it is, it's the perfect family home.
It is.
It is a house that a woman looks at, and that nesting instinct is like, oh, yeah, yeah, this is good. I'll take this one.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? No. Get a condo somewhere. Yeah. Like, get, you yeah. know, buy something stupid. Get a
have
condo.
Access to a hot tub they have to scan
right.
a key for, you know?
Right. Let them know, no, there's nowhere for you to stay. Yeah. I love that guy, man. I love Heffron.
Have you, you have a friend. Yeah, you've known him forever. I mean, since you got.
Yeah, we, you know, he brought it up because I had forgot. So Heff and I first went head to head on Star Search with Arsenio in like 01 or something like that. Yeah, we went. He and I have a long history of competing against each other in comedy. And when we finally finished Last Comic, we agreed to never compete ever in anything again. You know what I mean? Like if we're at the grocery store, it's like, you first. No, you first. You know that?
Wait, on Arsenio, you auditioned for Star Search?
No. Arsenio hosted. They did a remake of Star Search in the early 2000s, and Arsenio was the host.
Was this a part of, did he get this going in the crowd?
No. It was after his show, so they knew who he was, but they weren't doing the barking.
I always wanted to see that live. When I've seen old clips, I'm like, there was that clip that somebody posted recently of somebody yelling out like, how come you never have gay people on your show? Do you see this clip?
No.
And then he goes up into the stands. It's like the opening monologue. And he goes up into the stands and just roasts these guys. And in a very like diplomatic, funny, smart, fun way. But he was like jacked up. And once he did it, and he was like, and he ended it by being like, this is my show. And he's like, we've had people on here that are gay. He's like, but we don't know they're gay because it's not your fucking business.
Yeah.
And then he was going off and people were going nuts. And their version of going nuts and supporting him was everybody doing this. They're going, hoo, hoo, hoo. And then he goes, it's my fucking show. He goes, now let's start it. And he goes back down the stairs. And I was like, what I wouldn't have given to be in that audience just to be a part of that, you know? Hey guys, it's Adam Ray taking a quick break from the podcast to tell you about BetterHelp. Now look, life is full of ups and downs. There's always something that can get in the way of our happiness, and you need some way to talk to, right? I know for me, with my own issues in life, whether it's career-oriented, family drama, having somebody to talk to helps, and I don't feel like burdening friends or significant others with that info, okay? You need somebody with a neutral playing field and someone with a clean slate to come in and listen to what's going on with you, and that's what BetterHelp is for. I've used them. They're phenomenal. What they are, okay, is a online counseling resource, okay? Video chatting, texting. It's basically connecting with a professional counselor. Again, somebody that is unbiased and coming in that is a professional to help guide you with whatever's going on in your life. Privately online, okay? So it's convenient. You can do it at your own schedule, all right? Out of your own home, which is great. A lot of these places, you know, you need to go somewhere. It takes time out of your day. Maybe it's too far away to go to where you really want to get to. This is out of the comfort of your own home. You can schedule a video or phone session plus chat and text with your therapist, who are all licensed and specialized in things like depression, stress, anger, LGBT matters, grief, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anxiety, family conflicts. I know I've dealt with a lot of that in the last few years. Anything you share with them is confidential. It truly is a pretty phenomenal resource that they've created. And these counselors, there's over 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states. And four communication modes, again, text, chat, phone, and video. And if you're not happy with your counselor for any reason, request a new one. No additional charge. Because it's all about finding somebody that relates to you, you feel comfortable with, sharing the info that you'd like to get some help on. It's available on desktop, mobile web, Android, and iOS apps. Schedule your video and phone sessions, generally a week out, which is, you know, great. I think that's enough time for everybody to get their shit in order. And there's a broad expertise in the network, which may not be locally available in many areas. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, which is huge. Again, it's secure, convenient, professional, and affordable, which is kind of the biggest thing. A lot of people can't scrounge together the coin to get, even get this type of help, but it's super affordable. And best of all, right now, ALN listeners, that's right, you guys, if you need help, you need somebody to talk to in any of those areas I mentioned, depressed, stress, sleeping, trauma, family, anxiety, go to betterhelp.com/aboutlastnight and simply fill out a questionnaire, and you can get 10% off your order. That's huge. betterhelp.com/aboutlastnight Fill out the questionnaire that helps them assess what kind of help you need and what kind of counselor you're going to love, and start getting the help that that we all deserve. That's betterhelp.com/aboutlastnight to get 10% off your first order, and start connecting and living better, you know, because that's what it's all about. All right? Back to the episode.
The thing about guys like Arsenio or Leno or Drew Carey or any of those guys who are hosts, right? People don't understand how great a comic you had to be to get that job. You know what I mean? Like, people forget that Arsenio was a great stand-up.
Yeah.
And that's how he got the Arsenio Hall show, right?
Yeah.
Like, Leno was the biggest stand-up in the country when he got the Tonight Show.
Yeah. People forget that Dr. Oz hosted the open mic at the Improv.
Yes, yes, for days.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It was the free exams.
Do you...
So when you talk shit to Arsenio... You know, like, it's like talking shit to Rogan or Andrew. It's like, don't poke the bear because this is a comic.
Mm.
This is, or Al Franken, right?
Oh, yeah.
How about Al Franken as a senator and you talk shit to him and you forget that, oh, he got comic in him.
I know, dude. That's why I'm so bummed he's not like, oh, God,
that
was, I know.
That's the worst loss.
That's why the Magic Hour didn't work out. If it was Charles Barkley or Gary Payton, they could have, you know, trash-talked back.
Oh, but I love
Magic
that show.
Magic was too nice.
He was
Man,
too nice.
Man, Magic was, and Magic couldn't talk. Let's get real. Magic could not put together two sentences, you know, and it was just...
I know. So likable, but just like you couldn't, like...
Plus, as a comic, we have all day to just sit around and think about if someone offended us, what we'd say back. Like, I'm just doing the dishes, like, if someone said this to me, I'd say this. And someone finally says, I've been waiting for this moment.
Yeah. It's you know, that's... But that's the thing about those guys. They're comics, so...
Do you love, has that moment happened with, so you're hosting these live Family Feud shows across the country, which is so, by the way, if people haven't seen you host anything, you do it a decent amount, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Hosting is something I've fallen into, but I'm good at, so I
like
doing
it. Dude, you're so good at it. And when you told me you're doing the Family Feud shit, I was like, of course, which, you know, I think, you know, at some point, one of these big shows is just going to pluck you up, I have no doubt. Seeing you host the, what is the name of the award show at
the JFL
Montreal?
Awards?
It's the JFL Awards. It's the huge, like, end of the festival. Mm-hmm. All the big awards, like every, like, you know, Tiffany got the big breakout. Yeah. Jim Carrey getting the Comedian of the Year, and you're hosting this thing, which is like, there's so much star power in the room. It's almost more anxiety ridden, I feel like, than or pressure packed than the Oscars, because it's comics judging an industry, like, and really critique and watching you trying to be like. You know what I'm saying? There's just more comedic eyeballs.
I got to tell you, the fun part of doing that is like, Adam, I don't give a shit. I ain't getting discovered. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, I've been going to JFL off and on for 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, they've seen me.
Yeah.
So you know, people say that. And I appreciate that.
You crush it, man.
I love the love I get from the comics and hosting and industry in hosting that show. But it's also like, listen, it's not like I have nothing to lose here.
You say
so
that
I'm
too.
Just going to be funny because, you know, nobody's signing me to shit. You know what I mean? So
what were you saying when Judd was there? You were saying something about like.
I was always asking for jobs.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like Kenya Barris. I'm like, yo, man, Black-ish. Never need a big brother. Like, you ain't got a job. I can't, you know, this and that. So when Judd Apatow and Jim Carrey went up, I was like, liar, liar, bailiff. Just another name for bouncer. Just another name for security guard. Hook a brother up, you know. And,
no doubt,
and,
though.
Yeah, yeah, I was cracking on all of them about getting job. And I didn't even think of that until the second one. And then that's going to become the theme of the show.
Yeah.
And it was really fun. So, but yeah, that's what's cool about it. And also a lot of them I know, you know, who are getting awards or presenting
that
awards.
Helps, right?
So that helps and it's fun. Yeah.
Do you have that opportunity with Family Feud though to with a live show? Obviously.
You know what it is, man? It's doing crowd work one person at a time.
Awesome.
Like you go down the line and each one of them you talk to has something to say. Like I remember one kid, and he was literally a kid, he might have been like 17 or something like that, and it was like, you know, we surveyed 100 women, what's the best place to meet a woman, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, math class. like math class. And I was like, oh, so you work in the arithmetic angle. So you're doing homework and stuff like, you know, and you just get stuff like that. That is hilarious. That it's like, that's what Steve Harvey gets too. Cause when you talk to people like that, you get moments. But what the producers, who some of them also work on the show, they said, yeah, but Steve gets to cut and do it again. They're like, you're just doing it. And I'm like, yeah, well, this is the gig. So yeah, it's fun, man. It's anything like that, like the creative part of comedy. And when I can do something that's going to be funny and it's the funniest thing in that moment, but you can't do it again, I like shit like that. Yeah. You know, even though the part you can't do it again is the parts that's difficult. And the other thing, and I really do appreciate, like, again, this is all bullshit aside, I appreciate what you said about me hosting and looking for a job.
Oh, yeah, man.
You know, the hard thing with industry is they don't recognize that.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, they don't, the worst thing about the people making the decisions about our career is they don't know how to do what we do. They know nothing about it, you know. And believe me, I have fucked up in meetings because in the back of my head, I'm like, you've never made anyone laugh. Like, you're sitting in a glass tower in Culver City, so you have no idea what's funny in Boise or Chicago or Oklahoma City or this or that. And they're telling us, like, hey, Adam, let me tell you what's funny. No, motherfucker, let me tell you what's funny.
No, dude.
Because I just did 5 shows in Tampa.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, but you know that.
Yeah,
you,
man.
You get the same thing. You go on these auditions, you go in. And, you know, things stick. You get something now and then. But, you know, when you're having a meeting and you're talking to these people, like, we're not allowed to say what we want to say.
I know, and they think, yeah. When you're in Tampa, too, you got to be better than tits. You know how hard that is?
Tits and man. Although, like, whenever I see the bachelor party at a show, I'm like, you've made a horrible mistake. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, a bachelorette party is bad enough, but if you're a bachelor party and you're at a comedy show, unless you, like, specifically went to see Burr, I think Bill Burr would be, like, the only guy you get a pass on seeing at the bachelor party, but you still have to be on your way to tits. You know, you can't just see Burr and go home, you know?
We were just in Portland and a bachelor party got kicked out when Sandy was on stage.
They always get kicked.
What do they do, though, or say?
Because I don't remember specifically what it was, but it's the same story every time. They come and they want all the attention to be on them.
They
want to
be on them.
And they don't, like, comedy show is theater. And they come to party.
Yeah.
And those two things don't mix.
Right, and this is what I'm talking about. That's the lack of respect for the show.
Did they come to party at Family Feud? Are people drinking in the audience? Is it a...
At the casino shows, they did.
Wow.
But see, the casino shows are funny because then you're like, you're just another stop. Like, they come in and they watch it for 20 minutes, and then either they like it and they stay, or they're like, eh, and they go back to the casino. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it is what it is. But yeah, what you just said, that's a good way to put it. They came to party. They walked in the theater wanting to party. Now, with the women, all you have to do is give them the attention for that 5 minutes, and then they're happy.
Yeah.
They're good. If you recognize them, make one or two jokes about them.
Including them.
And then they're good. They've had the greatest time
ever. They'd be like,
and they still want to bang you. Like, you're still in the...
You're the adult entertainer.
Yeah, Adam, you're still in the we want to fuck you years.
Well, that's why I keep my calves in point, you know? Like, you just never know when you're going to show a little skin just to get a girl turned on. But you got 5 minutes? So we got this new segment on the show where we like to tackle. I know you're, you know, so good with the topical current stuff. Like we said, one of the best. And we have the segment on the show where we take up.
By the way, let me say this before I leave. Because I get invited to do a lot of podcasts.
I know you do, man.
I heard someone who had a shitty podcast say, it was funny that they said it because their podcasts were shitty. They're like, yeah, podcasts are the new jury duty.
You know? Wow.
Which was like, yeah, you get called to do it, you know. This one is fantastic, man. Your setup is professional.
Thank you.
It's fun talking to you guys.
Fun, right? It's a good hang.
Yeah, definitely. Like, so
enough of the pro aspect, but still with the hang. And
yeah. Like, yeah. So kudos to you
on
that.
I love you, man. Thank
you. All right.
So we take a look at the headlines in the world that aren't getting all the press that we think they should, and kind of the off stories off the beaten path.
In other words, we're going to talk about Florida.
It's a segment we
you're not wrong.
It's a segment we like to call "Wait, what? Huh?"
Do
Gets a laugh every time, never changing the title. Mark, what's the first story?
Now, I think, Alonzo, you're a sports fan. Are you also a boxing fan?
Not really, but I'm up on the fight. The fight.
I'm the same way. If the big fight's going on, I'll make sure I get the foot.
Yeah, me too. These are good highlights. There's these top four boxers, Wilder, Fury, Ruiz, and Joshua, they're at least very entertaining. Anyway, Tyson Fury licks blood off Deontay Wilder's neck during heavyweight championship win. Have you seen this clip?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Is that how you take his power away or something? I don't.
Also, this is.
Look at that. And he's working it, too. I think that's one of those tribal things where they're like, you drink the blood of your enemies before you kill them.
This is also the definition of white privilege. Mike Tyson's a cannibal. This guy, they're just like, he's just doing what he does.
You know, he's crazy, also, right? I mean, if you look at Fury, he is fat. He might have got hungry. It might have been a while since he had a snack.
It's not getting enough press. I mean, wow.
Or it's like with comics where it's like, everyone go up there and you got to say something about dingleberries tonight. And maybe one of his guys in his crew is like, hey, if you get a chance, you got to lick his blood. Well, I'll lick somebody's blood tonight.
Yeah. Or was it a bet? Did they do like weird?
Yeah. That
is it a prop bet that Vegas knew about that we
could've
didn't?
Could have been something.
Yeah.
You know, 100 grand on.
Also,
Fury's going to get his red wings.
But he went back for seconds. That's what throws me off. Like one lick, I'd be like, dude, you're a fucking gangster.
And that's where you know he really whipped Wilder's ass. Because if a man licks your neck, he's going to beat the shit out of him. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that's going to be like, you know you can whip a man's ass.
Yeah, that's a wrap on the friendship.
There's
that
also
is blowing a kiss to the next level.
Yeah. There's no irony in his eyes either. He's not joking here. He's not like, people see this to laugh about it. I'm kind of laughing. He's fully like,
I think he got hungry.
There's no irony in his eyes, but there's iron in his mouth.
It would be great the same way that you saw with Jose Altuve with the Astros thing when he's got that slow-mo video and he's like clearly like, don't pull my shirt off because there's a wire. But then he went on to say like he was embarrassed about a tattoo or something else. It'd be great if he was just like completely denied this and was like, dude, I was literally trying to move my tongue out of the way. Like, and said he wasn't even trying to like go for blood snacks.
Winded.
Yeah, I was winded. Yeah, I was breathing hard.
My tongue was hanging out.
Yeah.
I needed electrolytes.
Yeah. You guys didn't have Powerade like you said you would.
And then, get ready to meet our next colleague.
Please.
Alaska Airman receives discipline for urinating in coffee maker. ..
What? Okay, an Alaska-based airman was punished last week for reportedly peeing in an office coffee maker, according to a report. All right. Well, the incident was reported in a newsletter written by a legal office of Anchorage. Wait, scroll back up. wait, is that the P? The frowny face? The incident was reported in a newsletter February 13th. The details remain a mystery. According to the newsletter, the airman first class violated two articles, one being Article 92, dereliction of duty for failure to refrain from urinating in the coffee maker.
And then we scroll down. This is my favorite sentence here. Hold on.
Is there a sentence better than failing to refrain from urinating in the coffee maker? Like everyone had an urge, like you couldn't suppress that. Like everyone, I got to pee in the coffee maker. I got to pee in the coffee maker. I got to, and like, no, well, you got to suppress that urge.
It's Alaska. They get sick of writing their name in the snow. They got to pee somewhere else.
What's your favorite line here, Mark?
This guy is not fired. They didn't suspend. Oh, he got knocked down to the most basic level. But have you been fired from a job in stand-up comedy?
Yes, I said the C word at an all Christian show at the Tempe Improv as Tony Danza.
Yeah, I did. I got fired from the Palms for making fun of the Maloofs.
No.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
When Court was running that show.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
That was the Playboy comedy shows.
Yep.
Dang, dude.
I got.
Were they there?
Yes. Oh. I did not know.
What did you say?
So I got
billionaires
there.
Don't have a sense of humor about them. This
tell people who the Maloofs are.
The Maloofs, they owned the Sacramento Kings for a while. They owned the Palms for a while,
which
in
was
Vegas.
A hot casino.
It was the hot spot. It was where they did the Real World.
Yes.
So I get there on like Thursday, and it's like a Friday and Saturday show. And the woman at the desk is like, "Well, we don't have any rooms." And I'm like, "I'm performing here." She's like, what's your name or something like that? And I was like, look. And like the screen behind her rotating, like I popped up. I'm like, that's me. So she says, well, we can get you a room at the Rio. And I was like, I ain't doing a show at the Rio. You know, I was getting kind of pissed, right? Because they're playing it. See, it's that everybody wants to be here. And I'm like, look, I'm not some kid who wants to party with the real world. Like, I'm working here.
Yeah.
So I end up, they find a room, you know, and I go on radio and I joke about it on radio. And I said, you know, I can't, name the hotel, but it's named after a palm tree and this and that, right? So I opened the show talking about that, about how I couldn't get a room and this and that. And then I was like, and the Sacramento Kings ain't shit. And this and that, you know, because remember, I'm a Clipper fan, right? So now I'm cracking on the Kings and the Maloofs. And the crowd's cracking up. It's the whole thing, right? So it, after the first show, it was literally like a movie. Like these two guys, you know, in black suits come up to me, excuse me, you're going to have to pack up your room and leave the hotel. And
that was
I'm
a joke?
Looking like, what? And Court's behind the court was like, yo, man, nothing I could do. The Maloofs are here. You know, and I said, I did it. But I said, this was the part I said I had no respect for. They didn't tell the second show that they did that. You know, in other words, like, okay, you want to kick me out? Tell the second show that you're canceling me. You know, and you know, they let all these people pay their money and come in.
Ooh.
And then told them, like, no, he's not here. And they never said why or anything like that. And I said, now, if it had been the Riv, like real old school Vegas, they'd have taken me out to the parking lot, given me a beating, right? they hit you in the gut where it don't show, and you get your ass up there and do the second show, you know? And that's Vegas. I would have respected that.
And I'd have respected
an ass whipping in the second show.
And if it was the original La Sahara, you'd have to drink out of a different water fountain.
Yeah, there you go. Jesus. There you go.
Yeah, way to go, Mark.
No, but my favorite sentence.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong. Yeah. There is something too to be said about like putting it on the audience to let them assume, like by having you not show up and then not telling them why.
Right.
The audience probably assumes like this guy probably just fucking got too fucked up.
Yeah.
Couldn't make the show,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Exactly. No, so own it. If you did it, own it.
No. That's a great story, dude. That club was great, though. I mean, it was like the Playboy Club, and it was
yeah.
Like, I remember
downstairs.
I went with Brad once, and we went out to the pool, and I was like, "By the way, if you haven't been to a pool with a dwarf, it's truly just like
where can you go with a dwarf where it doesn't help? when
nowhere
is it not good to have
even
a dwarf
at the NBA Celebrity All-Star Game.
Yeah, dude.
It never not good. You know, there's never a bad time.
Dude, we were both single at the time, and he just literally, like, we're walking in, and I was just like, we were sitting there at a little cabana thing for a minute, and the club kind of hooked us up. And then he was like, Brad's like, all right. He's like, we need some friends. And I go, yeah, we do. He goes, I'll be right back. He goes to, like, three different little things. I don't hear anything. I just see like a lot of hand gestures. And then I see Brad all of a sudden start going like this and dancing. Mm-hmm. And then I see like six girls get up.
Yeah.
Just walk back over. And I was like, this guy is just, it's like throwing a football into, you know, into a pile of hotties.
Does Brad's arms go above his head?
No. What's our next story?
Okay.
We got one more.
Yep. Boom.
Is this it?
Strongman rolls 7 frying pans in 1 minute for a Guinness World Record. You want that?
Sure. Because here's my question. Do you follow the Guinness Book of World Record people? Do you take an interest when you hear a story of like the guy?
Once in a while, you see something. You know what I saw that blew my mind? Do you know what the world record is for plank?
No.
8 hours.
No.
Yes. The woman's record is 4 and the men's is 8. And I'm like, what kind of animal?
What the fuck?
And how bored are you? But right. But more so, yeah. So those kind of things blow my mind. But what is this? How do you roll 7 prime? Fine.
Okay.
What
does
that
clip?
Even mean?
I'm glad you asked.
I'll grab your cans real quick. Is
what
there
is that?
Yeah, we got sound for this.
Grab your cans. You can't say that when a woman's on the show.
Not around this girl. She goes, do you say grab the cans or the pants? All right, here we go.
Either way, I'm rolling.
Come on, Kathleen. Come on.
Woo! Kathleen, are you ready? 3.
Oh my God.
2. 1, go.
Whoa! Whoa! Come on, Kathleen! Come on! Woo!
Okay, I don't know frying pans were that bendable.
And the Celtics don't have a bit.
Down, macho! Time! 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 Time!
This is just like Brenda from Burbank. How'd she get on the show?
I had not. You know, I didn't do much research from the back end.
Time! Come on!
Okay, you can stop that right there.
So
that,
lower
that's
the
one of those
she
things.
Sets the record.
That's one of those things. Like you don't even know how hard it is because no one's ever tried to do that.
Yeah.
Right. Like who would even try to roll? But God bless her.
We don't.
You do not want a hand job from that woman. If she gets excited, it is going to end poorly. Just.
Or do you?
Yeah. Or do you? Where'd you grow up?
No.
What kind of motor
you? That, you know what that reminds me of? Remember when Bo Jackson broke the bat over his thigh?
Yeah.
Remember when he just like pushed it and and like nobody ever, nobody knew how hard that was to do. And then everyone was trying it and they were like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like he just broke a bat over his thigh like it was nothing.
Yeah.
That's this. Like
a lot of people.
I don't know anyone who's ever tried frying pan rolling, but I know some strong people probably can't do that.
Yeah.
We don't want the reaction of the crowd and her. I got
it. Scroll to it real quick. Yeah, let's just see it.
You might as well.
Okay.
Let's see if it works. There's another one.
And a fleshlight. What is that?
That's one of the fans, maybe.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. There you go. But
fireworks.
Yeah.
And you know the other thing? The woman who rolled 6 frying pans, she ain't shit now.
I know.
She rolled 6 and now nobody knows her name.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
She had a brief time.
Yeah, she had a moment. Yeah. And now she's like
that. She's sipping cocktails with her friends.
She's in the gym right now. Yeah. She's in the gym right now.
Janice, no one's stopping you.
We're at IKEA getting arrested.
Yeah. Amazing. Alonzo, you're the shit.
Man, thank you. This was phenomenal.
Dude, you're such a good hanger.
The whole
such
crew.
A good, and the special, where can people, Amazon?
Amazon
right?
Prime, heavy lightweight, you can download it. I am actually heading to South Africa, man. This is a first. I'm doing the African, the Cape Town Comedy Festival next week. And people have been, they've been threatening to take me to Africa for 10 years. You know, you get all these promoters like, oh, we're going to take you. We're going to do this. Well, someone has finally come through. So I'm really looking forward to it.
I've heard nothing. This has been a thing before, right?
Yeah.
I remember when Bobby Lee went for something, I think maybe Mo Mandel, a few other people, and they came back with like, they were like, it was one of the greatest things.
Yeah. Ruben Paul goes there with Russell.
That's right. Yeah.
And they say it's fantastic. You know, I'm bringing pictures of me with Trevor Noah and I'm dropping names. I'm like, you know, my boy, Trev, you know, just my boy right here, you know? So I'm looking forward to that.
Are you going to stay and like do any safari stuff?
I hope to do.
That's at the top of my list of things I want to do.
A friend of mine did a safari last year. So I know, actually, I have a friend named Jonathan Butler, who's a superstar in South Africa. Jonathan Butler, this guy told me, he said he's like the Stevie Wonder of South Africa. Oh, he's this amazing musician. He's literally performed for Mandela and the whole thing. And this
Holy
and that.
Shit.
So he did a safari and he took another friend of mine, another musician on. And he said, man, he was scared when he saw a lion. And I was like, Jonathan, that's the proper response. like, yes, you're supposed, like, you grew up there. But let me tell you something. Pete, you're supposed to be scared when you see a fucking lion. I want to see a lion, and I will be scared. I promise you I'm going to be scared if I see a lion. But, yeah, I would. I almost have to do, like, I don't think I can go and not do it. So we have a day off or something like that. I'm sure they're going to set it up.
Set up something for you.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And then all your tour dates, alonzoboden.com?
Yeah, alonzoboden.com. You know, when I get back from there, it's all downhill. Right. Once you're done Cape Town, like anything else you do. But no, I got some stuff. I'm doing Atlantic City. Doing St. Paul and on and on.
And the feud dates are on the website, too?
The feud hasn't been renewed as yet.
But it will be.
So hopefully it is.
I would say maybe The Price is Right. I'm trying to think of like the Mount Rushmore of game shows that aren't going anywhere.
And the company Fremantle owns all.
Fremantle's doing it.
Yeah, Fremantle owns all those game shows. So I'm like, can you give a brother a job?
They will.
You know what I mean?
I'm telling you, dude, that like enough. You're doing it enough, and enough people know now. It's just about them just finding the right one that matches up.
Hey, man, I'm in the game.
Yeah.
You know, so thank you.
And I know you don't like social media, but do you post on Instagram?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I finally connected with somebody. Again, this is where, you know, people say, oh, yeah, I do social media, and they don't do shit.
Yeah.
You know, I finally have someone who really does it. So now I got a lot of clips going up on my Instagram.
You got to do that. You got so much content. It's like that's such a big way for people to.
Yeah. So my Instagram game has definitely stepped up with their help. And so I'm out there. I'm out there. I don't Snapchat. I'm too old for that. I get arrested on Snapchat.
It's a young man's game.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's like, it's also like, that's, we didn't grow up with the immediate, like, I mean, when I see my nephew just like, literally not even talking to somebody, he'll just be sending back like a shot of him and then typing like, just chilling. And then she'll send back something. I'm like, he's like, yeah, we've spoken like 6 words to each other ever.
Yeah.
They're just like sending back snapshots of like, you know, almost like a flip book of their
lives.
Well,
anyone under 30, if you call them on the phone, they're like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, what? what's he, you know, this girl told me, she's like, I don't need creepers calling me. Like, like to her, like, you know, they say you spoke to her, like, no, don't, that's the worst thing. Like a phone call? No. Just, yeah. So, you know, that's my goal, man, not to be creepy. I'm at that age.
That's all of our goals this day and age.
Just got to avoid creepy. Well, Mark gave up on that one. Mark, he's embraced it, and you've done well with it.
You can go to my website, BillCosby.com.
Good night, everybody.